¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes. Brother, I'm going on a wild hog holding. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this joke course. But it's no host bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. It's been a few weeks. We took last Tuesday off, but we're back. We're back. We're ready for action. As always, all the links to the Discord, to the WWE shop. We got a lot of new merch out there. You know, you got CM Punk has a new shirt. His dog has 2 new shirts. Rhea Ripley's got some new stuff. You know, so go in and buy up on that WWE merchandise through the link in our description. We get a small percentage of all the sales through that link. So support the podcast through that and get you some good WWE swag. You see the Rhea Ripley shirt in the background there. You know, support mommy. We got a lot to talk about her tonight from Raw last night. As always, Wavy D over there repping the champions, Boston Celtics. Let's dive in to a Let's Get Cooking. And this idea came from Notorious Nerdy D's Thursday show last week, where he did like top 5 men and women from an AEW roster. He gave his opinions, and Wavy D was in the live chat there. I missed it. Honestly, completely forgot it, that he was streaming on last Thursday. And I was sort of swapping back and forth listening to James last Thursday as well. You know, something you got to know about that Beyond the Junkyard podcast. Thursday's 9:00. If you want some of the most biggest cat you'll ever hear in your life, tune into that show because he be capping all the time. With that, so it's top 5 men and women. If you were creating your own roster that you would take from AEW, we'll start with the men. We'll go one by one. So who would be the first person you would pick from the men's roster from AEW?
So the number one person I am taking is very easy answer is MJF. I'm taking MJF. He's the number one guy I'm taking. There's other names out there, but MJF, he can go in the ring with anyone. He's proven it time and time again. He has the mic skills. I know we debated a little bit earlier about in chat about how sometimes he just goes for too much of the pop. But he has displayed that he can do storytelling and that he can promote the best of them in the ring face to face. And so I think MJF is the best guy I would take with my number one overall pick if I was going to take somebody.
Right. So with that, I agree that MJF is probably the best guy on the roster. But when I'm starting, you know, I thought of this, if I'm starting a company and I had to take 5 people, I don't want their top 5, because the issue that we'll run in with that is everyone's going to want that top spot. I'm looking to build somebody. And in order to do that, I need a veteran who can, you know, teach some of these people the ropes here. And so with that, I'm taking Chris Jericho. I think he has to be on your roster. If you're taking someone, you could go Christian or Copeland or Danielson for that veteran role. My issue with them is they still feel like they're 25 and are willing to do the dangerous shit. I don't need you to do that. Jericho's willing to evolve, to do what he knows he can do and do it best. He's not going to want a world championship, so he's not going to be in that position. He's just there to teach the young guns how to get themselves over and to help promote the new roster. So who would be the next person you take?
Speaking of the young guns, if I could take one slot and fill with a tag team, I would take the Gun Brothers. Mm-hmm.
Austin and
Cody.
It's not Cody. What is the other gun?
Dylan? No. Colton?
Colton. Yeah. Yeah, Colton.
Colton, is that their names?
Yep, Colton and Austin, yep.
Yeah, I'm taking the Gun Brothers, Gun Club. I'm taking them. It was crazy because one of them, he just did wrestling because the other one started doing wrestling. Mm-hmm. I was watching Billy Gunn talk to Chris Van Fleet about, you know, and one of the topics was his sons and how they got into wrestling. But they're both pretty good naturals in the ring as far as in-ring work. They have the in-ring personality and characteristics and the energy. The promo skills could still use some work, but they're an up-and-coming tag team that I see being involved in the business for years to come, and I think they're going to reach the mountaintop in multiple industries, multiple promotions. I'm taking the Gun Brothers.
Yeah, so if I went the same route in terms of, you know, if you give me five slots, I'm going to get a little bit of that extra bang for the Buck, and why not go with the Bang Bang Gang? I have the Guns on my list as well. I think of the younger tag team, like, you could go FTR, but again, they're a little bit too old. FTR to me just doesn't, they don't draw outside of like the super hardcore fan base. And so they're a little bit boring. Even when they were in WWE, not a lot of people really cared about them. And that, to me, is one of the reasons why I don't consider them one of the greats, is if you can't get over in WWE. I know their tag team division hasn't really been good in terms of booking, but even when you were there, like, you couldn't really get yourself over there. So I can't say you're a great if you haven't been to the top of that. The mountaintop. So who would be the next person on your men's roster?
All right, I'm holding off on the big names because there's one person who I have a lot of faith in, mm-hmm. and some people look at him as the what's his name, what was Shawn Michaels' partner?
It's actually Marty Jannetty.
Yeah, some people look at him as the Marty Jannetty of the group. I actually look at him as a Shawn Michaels of the group. I think Anthony Bowens is a nice star, a nice young wrestler potential.
Right.
He has the in-ring moveset if you watch him in the ring, especially when he goes like either on a hot tag or if he's in control of the match, you know, running the action for an extended period of time, or if he's in a singles match. He has the wrestling skills, and he has more wrestling skills than Matt Caster.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has a personality for himself. You know, Max has, you know, like the rapping gimmick or whatever. But I feel as far as Max and his like character work and his promo work, from what I've seen, he's kind of a one trick pony.
Right.
As far as like the rapping stuff. But when I see Anthony Bowen, I see his connection with the crowd. He has the energy. You know, say you could work on your talking. He already has the in ring work. He's levels above Max Caster when it comes to in-ring work. I think he's the best of both worlds when it came to like Enzo and Cass. Anthony Bowens is the best of both of them into one person.
Right. So sort of another example of
Enzo this, Dawkins type.
I was about to say Dawkins is sort of that like Max Caster type guy where he has charisma, but you know, he's definitely holding down Montez Ford. Like, and so I think I actually agree with you. Of the two, I think Bowens is the best. I don't see, you know, what I mentioned with MJF of like, he, a lot of his promos is just for the pop. That's what Max Caster is. He's just there to get a pop, but outside of that, he doesn't really say much of anything. And so, yeah, Bowens is better in the ring. I think he's better on the mic. If we had to compare both of them, Bowens without a doubt is the main star of that group. I like that. So I'm going to go somewhat in the same direction of sort of a bigger guy, and that's Wardlow. I think there's a lot of potential here that Tony Khan is missing out on, not having Wardlow. I get he can't speak. Give him a mouthpiece. You had him in the Callis family or whatever. I think he was in, or he was in one of those groups.
He was in the Adam Cole one.
Yeah, Adam Cole's group. Yeah. Why can't they talk for him? Granted, that team's not really the greatest talkers either, but give them someone like Callis or someone like Stokely Hathaway, and give them a mouthpiece. You can build the next Brock Lesnar type character. And because there's that much potential. Wardlow, when he was at his best, was one of the hottest things on AEW. That feud against MJF was very good.
Wardlow, I see shades of Bobby Lashley.
Right.
I think Brock Lesnar was, you know, slightly more athletic. A lot more athletic. I see him, more that Bobby Lashley type, where he's still pretty, like, very athletic, you know, above average athletic, but he's more like too muscular to do what Brock did, because Brock was a freak of nature athlete doing like shooting star presses. I think he's like football player, like defensive end athletic.
Right. Okay. Who would be your fourth person on the men's roster?
When I originally was answering this in Nerdy D's chat, Wardlow did make my list, but I had to bump him off because I added the Gun Brothers. Okay. I do like the Gun Brothers. So right now I got MJF, the Gun Boys, and I got Anthony Bowen. I still think he's too good to pass up on, and I think his mic skills aren't that far behind. Like, especially if you can push other wrestlers such as a Gunther or a Dragunov or a Braun Breaker, like, if you can push, like, these overly aggressive guys who don't have the greatest of mic skills, you can push this guy as well, which I'm going with Will Ospreay. I think he can speak well enough to get by in a feud as far as, like, what really helps him is he has the accent. So the accent kind of, like to Americans, makes him sound a little bit tougher, because like it's like when we think of, like, you know, wrestlers and their promos and stuff, like, they're acting, and what's the one of the hardest parts about acting is when you got to put on an accent, you know what I'm saying? But he has the accent naturally, so when he speaks, I don't know, he just seems like he's naturally tough. So I buy it when he's talking to somebody in the ring, you know what I'm saying? He's like that rugby player. Tough guy persona.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he can go in the ring with everyone. We know he's the best, you know, in-ring, like, move-for-move wrestler in the world. So I'm get Will Ospreay and get, you know, some feuds out of him and MJF at the top of the card. I'm going to build up Anthony Bowens for my mid-card to potentially go to the main title picture. And then I got the Gun Boys to hold down my tag team division to start off. So that's my first four picks.
So I don't hate Ospreay being a pick. He's not the type of person that I would put on my roster, because he doesn't aim to the people that I hope to have watch my show. It's not that he's bad. I just don't find him in that area of sort of the entertainment side of the business. If I was building a straight wrestling roster, without a doubt, he'd be on the list. But I also probably wouldn't have the rest of the people on here. So in that realm, I went Orange Cassidy. I think Orange Cassidy, he's grown on me in the last 5 years. I thought he used to be the dumbest thing that they had. But I think if you allow him to actually wrestle without the hokey, like, soft kicks, which are still fun to do, but he can wrestle without it. He's pretty good there. We see a little bit of his promo ability with this feud with Trent, where he can actually talk. He doesn't have to be the sort of super lazy gimmick. Orange Cassidy has a lot of potential that I feel you could put him in there, you know, segments with a lot of other good wrestlers. And he could hold down a mid-card. I think he proved it with his title run, the international title run that he had. So who's your last on the men's roster?
So the last person on my roster, not going to lie, this guy did not make the list either when I was doing my show. I mean, when I was watching Nerd D show, while you were talking for over the last two picks, these guys snuck into my head, and I just really like their ring work. I got to go with the Lucha Bros. I'm snagging another tag team because I'm thinking, you know, like when you start a promotion, you got to hit all the different markets of people, right? All different segments of people. So if I'm, you know what I'm saying, I got the, you know, the blue collar white guy. I got the European, you know, foreigner. He's Australian, European, whatever. I got the foreigner, you know what I'm saying? I got the black guy, Anthony Bowens, you know what I'm saying? I got a brother right there. You know what I'm saying? I got the young tag team, the up and coming tag team, you know what I'm saying? My little nepotism hire, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, they're gonna need some people to go against, you know what I'm saying? So I got the luchadors, you know what I'm saying? I gotta touch different segments. And also, like, when you're running a wrestling show, you know what I'm saying, you need a little bit of something for everybody, you know what I'm saying? So I got MJF and Ospreay to give you that, you know, that indie wrestling match that you might want to love so much. But MJF can give you the promo in the ring to, you know, to entertain you for 20 minutes, 15 minutes. Anthony Bowens, he can go with the best of them. You got the luchadors for people who love lucha wrestling and the high flying, the cruiserweight stuff. And also, I see a star in Penta El Zero. All right. I see a guy who can wrestle with the cruiserweight, who can wrestle with the big guys. You know, especially when I watched this match with Adam Copeland, Edge.
Mm-hmm.
He showed that he can go with WWE style guys as well as the indie guys, big guys, small guys. I see a star in him. Someone like him and Ray Phoenix could sell merch. You know what I'm saying? The lucha merch sells off the shelves. The masks, tournaments like almost like my next Rey Mysterio's, Kalisto's, we're selling merch for days. Anthony Bowens sells merch for days. So these guys I look to when I'm starting my promotion. Okay. So I talk myself into those two.
My last is when I speak of potential, this dude just screams potential, and it's Ricky Starks. I don't know where the hell he's been. He hasn't been on TV in forever. And it just feels like Tony Khan's just going to let him walk right into WWE. And I'm all for it. Have him walk into Orlando. We'll take him down at NXT. So let's transition to the women's side of this roster. Who would be the first woman you take?
First one I'd take is easily Willow Nightingale.
Nah.
Willow. Okay. Britt Baker, yes. But Willow, that was a give me. But also, right. Outside the give me of Britt Baker, I'm taking Willow Nightingale. All right.
So that's one and two? You're going to have Britt on your roster?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Britt has to be on the roster. With that, you go Willow number two. I'm going, you knew this was coming, Deonna Purrazzo. She held down TNA's roster. Why she left to go to AEW to not be used, that's a decision you have to ask her. But she is fantastic. One of the best women's wrestlers in the world. So I will without a doubt take her. Who's number three?
So I got Britt Baker. I got Willow Nightingale. I got to go with Toni Storm. Even though I don't like her timeless Tony gimmick.
Right.
But you know, she has a character work. She can do character shit. So that's why I got to take her. She was formerly in WWE. She had a better career, like, you know, outside of the main roster, she had a better career. She came over at the wrong time, kind of, at the tail end of Vince. Didn't really know how to use her. But Tony has personality, has the storytelling skills, in-ring skills. We'll switch her gimmick up. But she shows that she could commit to a gimmick and commit to a story. So I'll take Tony.
So I'm going to go the other side of that pairing. And I'm picking Mariah May. She, if you haven't picked up, I'm going potential. So, like, Britt is the sort of veteran of the group with Deanna. Mariah May is the potential star in the making, just like she is in AEW. Mariah May has a little bit of that sex appeal that you want, similar to like Liv Morgan. We'll talk about that a little bit later down the show. Mm. But, Mariah May, who's number four for you?
Now, I need a little bit of a veteran, all right? Mm. So somebody who I could throw in the main event scene, I could trust right away. You know what I'm saying? They might be here for, like, you know, 3-4 years. I'm not looking for too much into the future with this person. I'm looking kind of like how you do with Chris Jericho. So someone to come in, show the girls the ropes. I'll probably put the title on her early on. I'm taking Thunder Rosa. I like Thunder Rosa. I'm a Thunder Rosa fan. I think she might come to WWE pretty soon too, within the next 2 years. I know she's slightly on the older side when it comes to the women because she's 37,
right?
36. But also you got Becky Lynch, who's also 36. You got Charlotte Flair, who's like 35, 36, 37. Asuka's 41, 42. You know, Bianca Belair, 35. So, like, she's in the age group of these other women who we look at as the top stars of WWE. So why not give her a few years at the end of her thing? And, you know, we'll throw Thunder Rosa in there.
That's about to be the most toxic locker room because Britt and Thunder do not like each other at all.
Well, guess what? They got to get over it. You know what I'm saying? But also, I think that's because AEW does have leadership in backstage. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
You're right. So you're right. You're not wrong.
When Big Wavy is running the show and they know who the answer to, and I put people in the right spot to make these people productive, and we have a common goal.
Right.
They're going to work effectively.
Right. So I like the pick. I'm not the biggest Thunder Rosa fan, to be honest, but I like the pick. My number four is Chris Statlander. She it speaks for herself. Her in-ring works great. If she could just stay healthy, she probably would have been champion by now. She's very good. She's a little bit on the bigger side, so she could play like a bully type heel character, like what they're trying to do with Nia Jax. Who's your last woman that you would take?
Chris Statlander.
Statlander?
She's number five on my list.
Okay.
She beat out Saraya, and I'm not too familiar with Mariah May yet. I know she has like the whole storyline going on with Tony, and I've seen some stuff from her. But from my knowledge of her, from what I've seen of her, she's just been like, you know, eye candy or like manager, like ringside type of thing. I haven't seen too much of her in ring work, so that's why I'm going down the Mariah May route. Saraya, it's past her time in WWE. Like, she had her chance.
Right.
But she's also, like, an injury risk, you know.
Yeah. I think with Saraya is even when she was, you know, at the top of her game as Paige, like, were we at all, like, really sold? Outside of it, the hardcore, like, European fans.
Well,
like,
it was because she was different. That's why. It's because she was different.
Right.
Because she came in at the midway through tail end of the Diva era. So, she seemed more like a wrestler and an anti-diva, so that's why she got more attention at that time. And I feel like she honestly, like, not deserved, but we've gotten in today's today's wrestling world.
Right. Now, this roster of mine has been built solely on potential. So this last pick's going to be just the same. Y'all listening probably going to laugh, be like, who the hell is this person? Red Velvet is a star in the making. If Tony Khan, now this goes down to a different conversation that the IWC has been having all week. What feels like for they always tend to come to this conversation at certain points of how AEW doesn't necessarily treat their black superstars the best. That's not a conversation I really care to join. Y'all can have your opinions on it. All I know is Red Velvet's never on TV. I don't care what they're doing in ROH. Athena should be on the main roster, or I guess on AEW. Like, I don't care what you're doing in ROH. Athena could have the greatest run there. No one's watching it on TV because it's not on TV. And so Red Velvet has potential. I saw it when Jade was in AEW. You know, she could be a centerpiece of like a mid-card women's division that we could build. As I'm pushing Perrazzo and Baker as the first big feud, I can build up a Mariah May, a Chris Statlander, and a Red Velvet to sort of take the reins from them.
To those not familiar with Red Velvet, would you describe her as I would, as a great value last legend?
I don't like the comparison to Last Legend because Last Legend's freakishly big. Like, Red Velvet's not six foot. She's like,
but she's more on the muscular side, though, right? Isn't Red Velvet on the muscular side?
A little bit. I mean, I see where you're coming from. Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I would probably say more of she plays sort of that role that Sasha Banks played her last run. And WWE, the sort of like heelish, but sort of like a. Did you watch heel Bianca in NXT, where Bianca was sort of just
ghetto? Yeah, I've seen highlights and clips and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, it was a little bit like that. Is what I would book her as, a little bit like, yeah. That's how I would sort of push Red Velvet as definite heel, and. Because that's all I've really seen her as, the sort of face, like, underdog thing. I honestly hate those type of stories. They're overplayed. but there's that. So what we're going to do with Let's Get Cooking over the next few weeks is we're gonna continue this. Next week, we're going to do the same thing, but from TNA.
I'm going to say, I mean, is that kind of like the last promotion? I can't say nothing about New Japan.
Right, yeah. So it's TNA. We're gonna do TNA. The week after that, we're going to do NXT, and then the week after that, we're going to do main roster WWE.
I was about to say, I can't say shit about New Japan.
I was thinking about it. I was like, should I do New Japan? No, because I don't know. First off, they don't really have women on their rosters. But second, I don't know jack shit what's going on in Japan right now.
all I know is Zack Sabre Jr. That's all I know.
but with that, let's move into we're about to do our SmackDown and Raw reviews. We're going to go through. That's going to be the most of the rest of the show here. And we're going to introduce the slapping meat ranking system. So Dave Meltzer has his star system. We're going to have something similar. The slapping meat ranking system goes from 1 to 5. 1 is awful. 2 is decent. 3 average or good. 4 great. And 5 is perfect. Nothing can beat this. Now, we're not going to be like Meltzer and give everything like a 5. We're not. There's not going to be a 6. There's not going to be no 4.25s. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So with that, let's jump into SmackDown from last Friday, and we jump into Andrade versus Carmelo Hayes. How you feel about this match?
So, on the scale of wrestling matches that I have watched throughout my entire life, this was a 3.
Okay.
As far as SmackDown over the course of the last 2 or 3 months, this is a 4.
Right. Yeah, I gave it a 4. I gave it a 4.
It was more the fact that like there was nothing on the line really. Right. You know, it was two guys trying to fight for a place on the card, fight for a place, hopefully to challenge probably LA Knight next, kind of, you know, try to buy for position. The match was good. The in-ring work was good. A lot of people were comparing it to the Ospreay and
MJF
match. But, you know, it was a little bit unfair, but I get it. You know, it happened in the same week, a couple days right after. Especially because everybody was talking about how that went on for an hour where you could do a good match within, 10, 15 minutes. So, it was what came next and got caught up in comparison.
Right.
Really good match for a SmackDown TV show, especially within the last few weeks where I've been hating SmackDown lately. SmackDown's been, especially this episode of SmackDown, was pretty subpar.
Mm-hmm.
From my personal opinion, I'd probably give the SmackDown as a whole probably 2. But that's what I got for as far as Andrade and Carmelo. But really good match. Not much on the line, but we're trying to fight for position.
Right. So I like the match for what it was. I'm not going to sit here and sort of judge it on what I thought it should be. But what I do know is if they would have built up a story and put this on a pay-per-view like Bad Blood or something, they could make a banger out of these two. All this is trying to jockey for position for who gets the next for the U.S. championship. Is essentially how I looked at it. My fear with how good this match was, though, is that they're going to see that Carmelo Hayes can put people over, and he's not going to be able to progress up the roster because, you know, similar to something like a Ziggler, where Ziggler was known for putting on great matches that got other people over, so they never took him out of that spot. That's my fear with Carmelo, is he's so good at what he does that they're just going to put him there. And it's not a bad career. You can make a great, Dolph Ziggler made almost $1 million a year for 10 years straight, wrestling 3-4 times a month and losing all of them. So, Carmelo, it's not a bad gig, but I think Carmelo has a lot better potential, more potential to be, I think he could be world champion and WWE. I really do. So for the match itself, I'll go ahead and give it a 4. I'm with you. I felt like a lot of the show was kind of blah, especially the next big thing, which is Nia versus Bayley's little interview promo. I don't really got a lot to say about it because not a lot really happened here.
It was a 2 as far as number wise.
Yeah.
They did not put Nia in a good spot to succeed. They got to play more to her strengths, which they've done pretty well over the last few months. They started playing to her strengths since she came back at the Rumble. They've been playing up to it better. But putting her just in a straight talking segment, not even face-to-face, just over a webcam or over whatever, is not even close to her best stuff.
Right.
Bayley saved the segment a little bit because, she was able to do some talking. You can always rely on Bayley to talk and do a decent promo. Bayley's one of those superstars that's a jack of all trades, but a master of none. She does everything good, and there's nothing that she's terrible at.
Right.
She's a very reliable wrestler. Is she the best in the ring? No, but can she go out there and mess around and give you a 4 or 5-star match on a random pay per view? Yeah, compared to the right person, yeah.
Right.
Very weak segment, but it got their next segment later in the night was done better.
So we move on. The next thing I have written here is Bianca Belair with Jade in her corner versus Chelsea Green with Piper Niven in her corner.
Very forgettable.
You literally just took the words out of my mouth. I put it as just 3, but it's one of those things where I'm sure it was a good match. I don't remember it.
No, it wasn't. It was a squash match.
It was a squash? Okay.
Chelsea got 2 punches in, and the match was over within 2 minutes.
Okay. So I might have to change this rating then. That sounds like that's one level at that point.
From what I can recall, it got past the message because it got set up, if you remember, that Chelsea was outside Nick Aldis's office trying to get a word with him. for the second for the second week in a row. And then Bianca and Jay came over and they tried to talk to him. And Chelsea was like, get in line, yada yada. And then Bianca was like, I have an idea. Go meet me out in the ring tonight. It was a previously recorded segment. I don't recall them showing like, you know, like earlier in the night thing. I thought it was happening like live. Because right. next thing I know,
they're changed. Right.
Entrances hit and they were like in their ring gear.
Right.
So it was a earlier in the night thing, but right. that's what set it up. And it's just, you know, kind of, you know, just get the tag teams, I guess, some, you know, more beef going on. And then after the match, I think the Witches were on the screen, the Unholy Union, and they said some words or whatever. And then that was kind of the segment.
Okay.
Give it two, give one or two.
Yeah. We'll move on, though, to one of my favorite segments of the night, and that is LA Knight versus Logan Paul in their promo. Let me tell you something. This boy Logan was cooking. I know on Wavy our Nerdy D's post show, you mentioned that like some of Logan Paul's references are a little bit corny, and like calling him Larry the Lobster. Look, we ain't got to be doing that.
Yeah,
but cook
and then say that.
Right, he'll be cooking and then he'll be like, "What the hell you to say?" Coming at him with the disrespect, with calling him his government name. I think a lot of like that's able to be done on a SmackDown where most of the fans probably watching don't know that LA Knight's name is Sean. And like I even had to look it up. I'm like, who the hell was Sean?
I double checked too.
And so I like that. I gave this a 4. It's gonna be really hard to get a 5 on my list. And so I really, really like this. I think it built. It's probably one of the best things that happened on this episode, if I'm being honest with you. But yeah, what would you say about this promo?
I definitely think the Sean thing. I think, say if Logan, if he went on script, right, and he said Sean like out of pocket, I think it'll go over smoother because LA Knight, his name isn't something like a Seth Rollins or like a real name or like Xavier Woods or a Kofi. It's like LA Knight, like Los Angeles Knight or whatever.
Right.
So like it's easier to look at as a stage name. Right. Like you know, when you're a kid, you think someone's real name is Seth Rollins or someone's real name. But people know, like, it's not really L.A. Knight, especially when he went by Max Dupree or whatever. Like,
right.
People know that L.A. is a stage name. So I think if it was off script, it'll go over smoother backstage. But, yeah, Logan was cooking a little bit. L.A. Knight held his own. But, yeah, Logan will say some good shit and then followed up with, like, some very lackluster, like, sucker and succotage or like some like Gen Z reference that like the kids barely get. Like I'm surprised he hasn't called him Skibbity or anything like that yet. or like a freaking Skibbity Alpha or whatever, Skibbity Sigma. Or like my middle schoolers say that.
Got that Ohio Riz.
Yeah, the Ohio Riz. it was a good promo battle. If I'm not mistaken, did they both sign the contract or just LA?
They both signed it.
Did Logan signed it?
I remember Logan signed it.
All right, so it's signed. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
Next week, if Logan does show up, well, he probably will because SmackDown will be in Ohio because SummerSlam's the day after. Mm-hmm. So I assume next week is going to be like either like in the same town or the same arena. No. So SummerSlam's gonna be in the big arena.
I think SummerSlam's gonna be at the Brown Stadium. I think the SmackDown's gonna be where the Pacers play. I believe not the Pacers. Excuse me. Who the fuck plays in Cleveland? Where the Cavs play?
Okay, cool.
That's where I believe it's gonna be at.
All right. So yeah, Logan Paul might show up. He might not. Probably will in some capacity. Not much else has to be done to build that up. That's kind of all set in stone.
So I agree with what Nerdy D said. I think the stories are set up. We're just filling in blanks right now. Mm. And it really works. It fits perfectly that Triple H did this well. I got to get this story built while we're on, USA or Fox before the Olympics. And he's accomplished that. Every single, as we go to Raw, we'll notice that all of Raw's stories are set up for SummerSlam. So the next two weeks, the fallout of SummerSlam and all of that, with it being on Sci-Fi, which not everyone gets, it's going to be one of those. I don't expect a lot to happen on those shows, because it's on a different network. And so Triple H has built these stories very well. And this is coming from someone who literally just last Friday said Triple H, you know, we got to slow down on praising him. But when he does things right, you got to give the man his flowers.
The match card looks set. You shared it in the Discord earlier. It looks like it's set. I would personally add one more match, probably like a tag team match.
I want 7 works. I would like a tag team match that never – they're probably going to get DIY defending it because Gargano is from Cleveland.
Oh, isn't the Gauntlet match for number one contender this Friday?
That's what I believe.
So hopefully they don't do the title match on the Friday before SummerSlam. Hopefully they save it for the card.
That's what I
would. Johnny's from Ohio, right?
Johnny's from Cleveland. With sad news, if you guys don't know, a lot of people were looking at his dad's restaurant burnt down. So thoughts of the family. That's a difficult situation. His dad's been working there. He's there for like 50 years.
Yeah,
And I know a lot of wrestling fans liked going there when they went to Cleveland because, you know, it's Johnny Gargano's dad's restaurant. But Johnny's got to be on the card. You don't go to Cleveland and not put Johnny on the card. I don't see how you do that.
Hopefully the Miz can make an appearance, maybe as like a host or something, or right. A segment on the show, like, you know, like a filler to break up the matches.
Right.
Maybe the Miz will come out and do like the attendance record or something. Who knows?
Something like that. Yeah, you know they got something like that planned. Maybe he'll introduce Jelly Roll for us.
Ooh, solid.
Speaking of that, now that they announced it, Jelly Roll is gonna. Can we mute Pat McAfee's mic? Because the last time they had live performance was Royal Rumble when Hardy was performing, and Hardy's performance wasn't really all that bad. In the arena, from what I heard, it was just bad on TV because Pat was singing over top of it. can we mute his mic while Jelly Roll's performing? Let's move on, though. We got Tiffany Stratton versus Meechan. I thought it was a solid match. It was a 3.
Yeah, it was definitely a 3, yeah.
Meechan's been getting a lot of screen time here, which is, I mean, she's playing her role. She's doing a very good job at it.
She got the win.
She did. She got a surprise win. I did not think that she would beat Tiffy.
Same.
They did a good job also destroying the case, that which gives a reason for her to come out this Friday with the new. Yes. I'm assuming it's going to be pink. It's going to say like Tiffy in the Bank or something on it.
Yes. Which is why I don't think she cashes in anytime soon. I think we go maybe like 2 or 3 months before she cashes in. You gotta sell those briefcases before she cashes in.
See, you're ruining my prediction, because that was gonna be my prediction was gonna be she cashes in at SummerSlam. But yeah, if she comes out with a new case.
You gotta tease her Nia a little more,
right? If she comes out with a new case, you're not just gonna have her cash in, you know, a week later. You got cases to sell. You got money you have to remake for building a whole new briefcase there. We then move into, I know there was a Bloodline like vignette that played. I'm gonna save that to the end. I'm gonna merge the Bloodline segments together. Ooh. That and then their beatdown at the end. I'm gonna talk about them as one whole thing. Before the beatdown, though, you had Cody Rhodes and mystery tag team partner that we could have seen from a mile away, Kevin Owens. We waited all night to figure out who this mystery partner is. I mean, I was seeing theories about how it was going to be Roman. It was going to be Jimmy. Maybe even Jay. And no, it's Kevin Owens. And that was a little bit of a letdown. The main sort of like, I guess, thread that people waited to see was a surprise partner. And it's the same grouping. But it's not as bad as it is, because now Kevin Owens gets beat down. Him and Randy are essentially out of the way. This sets up Cody needs help at SummerSlam. Maybe you get a Jey Uso, Sami Zayn. They'll be there. Maybe they, and this could sort of set up the Bloodline versus Bloodline story. So it's not as bad as I think we initially thought it was. The match itself, average. I gave it a 3 as well. It accomplished what it needed to do. Grayson Waller and Theory, I have a feeling are about to split. I think that's where they were headed. But what did you think about that before we talk about the Bloodline?
I cannot rate this match. after the first 3 minutes, I dozed off and fell asleep. And then I woke up to Kevin Owens laying in the table. So I missed the whole match. I was dozing off left and right. The only thing I could consciously remember was the end of the show. Kevin was laying through the table. And then, like, you know, a couple seconds later, the show was over. So I missed, like, this whole match as far as, like, cognitively paying attention to it. And I missed the beatdown. I saw the, like a couple of Twitter videos after, but I didn't watch
them. Since I forgot you said that you fellas, you were dozing off during this, so I'll save our Bloodline talk. I'll say this. This is what I'll say, because B-Master asked us a really good question about the Bloodline. So we'll have our Bloodline discussion at that point. The backstage, or like the sort of like pre-recorded vignettes they do with Solo, this is what I've been saying that they needed to do with Roman when he couldn't make TV because he was on vacation. If y'all would have just recorded like 6 month worth of these backstage promos or from like the Island of Relevancy, then people would probably stop complaining that Roman never showed up, because their real complaint is he's never on screen. And so if you just, while you have him for 2-3 months, record these, take a day to record 6 months worth of promos. Overall, I'd give this SmackDown probably a 2, 2.5 if we had to like round it out.
The only thing that's scaring me is that the Bloodline is going over too many SmackDowns in a row.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I think Cody's gonna retain it.
Okay.
Because usually the way WWE booking goes, yeah,
they typically. I always had a theory when I first got back into watching wrestling. Cody actually taught me this. If the face went over the show before the pay per view, they were losing. Whoever went over was losing at the pay per view. It's typically how they used to. Now that was under Vince. That was like early 2010s, like 2014. Where, like, you know, if AJ Styles went over the Friday before a pay-per-view, whoever he was facing was probably going to beat him. That's sort of how Vince booked. Triple H does similar things. I do agree. Them sort of ending the show, like, 3 weeks in a row, sort of beating down people, it starts to feel like it's rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
Rinse, repeat, recycle. And so let's move into the show that Wavy D is, you know, director of operations of, you know,
public relations.
There it is, director. Public relations. Yeah, public relations. You know, he's got his he's the one that makes sure that his man Adam Pearce tries to get the show full so he doesn't have to make random matches.
Exactly.
This is Monday Night Raw. We start out with a Gunther promo that involved Damian Priest coming down and responding with a brawl. And I swear he writes the Wavy D over here writes the show. Because in the chat, we go to commercial and Milwaukee Mike says, "What? Why they cut?" And Wavy D says, "Oh, wait, they'll come back from commercial and they'll be brawling backstage." That's exactly what happened. Come back from commercial. Michael Cole sets up like some ad or whatever they were talking about. And then they're backstage and it's them two fighting. This
and then hop right into that match I was telling you about. It's gonna go right to the match.
Right. Yeah, Gunther does the heel thing so well. Like he was told whatever you got to say to make Damian Priest feel relatable. Yeah, it was.
The segment was a 5.
You're giving it a 5?
Yes, the segment was was as perfect as I think it can get. All right, it elevated or built on what they did last week, where Gunther had that, like, it was like that Triple H of Booker T vibes about, like, you know, a little bit of classism, and then you know kind of like superiority complex, the inferior complex, you know what I'm saying? And then this week they built on it, where Gunther doubled down. He was going to try to explain himself, but the crowd was booing him. So he said, "Fudge it, I'm gonna get right to the point. I'm not sorry for shit. I'm better than Damien. Damien is street trash. All his friends are street trash, and he don't deserve that title. I'm gonna take that shit." And Damien came down. You know what I'm saying? He came stomping down to the ring. He wasn't, you know, doing no crowd pandering to, you know, diminish the moment. He was in the zone. They came down. They started brawling and stuff. The break aparts were good. Damien looked strong because he kept breaking out of it. And he looking good. Even that, and then when we came back from commercial, the backstage stuff looked good too. They were selling it well.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one where Priest put him face first into like one of the parts of the truck. And I don't think that was selling. I think Damien didn't pull on that one and just sent them right into the truck, which is fine. I mean, if Gunther's one of those guys, he'll take that spot and not be upset. So, Gunther
tops you all day,
right? Right. Gunther, and Priest, you know, when this match was booked, when I always said, because this is what I imagined would happen if it was Seth versus Gunther, I always thought that the story leading into it was, you know, I'm the ring general, I don't need all the fancy outfits and blah, 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 and all of this. That's what I thought the story would be. Well, they're doing exactly that with Priest and Gunther. It's just a different level of, instead of the outfits and the flashy entrances that Seth does that you could have attacked, it's, well, your story is you came from nothing, blah, blah, blah. No one cares about that. You're a loser. You're a bum. And so I think that actually hits harder. It's a little bit more relatable to be to a lot of the fan base, who relates to Priest, as well. So I gave it a 4, but if we were like 4 points, this would be like a 4.9. You gotta round it up. We'll give it a 5. We'll give it a 5. It was good. And it goes flows right into Dragunov versus Braun Breaker, which you put this match on TV, I'm watching it. I don't care. I've seen it. This is going to be Cena versus Orton of this generation. We'll see this match probably 100 more times before they retire. In any iteration, I'm watching it. I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of the finish. I agree with Bully Ray. They should have just did a 10 count. But I get what they're trying. I mentioned this before the match. They had to do something to get a triple threat. I've always just felt that this was going to be a triple threat. And Dragunov can come in next Monday. Hey, I wasn't pinned. This is how they've booked him in NXT. He gets beat up. He looks like he's hurt. He comes back all taped and bruised. I'm a rise from the ashes and I'm ready to go. And that's his character. He'll probably be the one to take the pin, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so I do believe that this will be a triple threat. I know Nerdy D's not sold on it yet. But I
think they both take the pin.
You think?
I think Braun does the rack 'em and stack 'em.
You think he's going to rack 'em? Okay.
Okay. Yeah, he pins them both at the same time. Yeah. Like a little differently.
Can you imagine like a double spear?
Yeah, like, I think could happen. I think he spears them both and just lays on like this.
Just lays on, yeah. Okay, I can see that. We end this. I believe what's next was the Judgment Day. They were in the clubhouse. They had several of these clubhouse promos like they do every week. So I'm gonna judge them all the same. So the first one was, Rhea walks in, they're playing 2K, and she comes in, and basically they're trying to say, hey, we got to put an end to Jey Uso, and she's like, no, don't touch him. You know, playing into, it's getting a little spicy here. Rhea and Jey has some rumors going on, that numbers have been exchanged, and all the IWC are complaining. I thought the days of sexualizing the wrestlers are over now. Shut the fuck up. This is great television. Like, they're not overly doing anything. This is no different than what you get on any movie anywhere. Like watch something other than wrestling for once. And this is real tame compared to what they could be doing.
Yes.
But these promo segments in the clubhouse, they were fine. They served a purpose. I think the second one came a little bit later in the night where I think it was Finn that said, you know, ask Dom about Liv or something like that, and sort of irritated Rhea, which leads to them going to the ring, which we'll talk about that separately. But overall, these segments, really fun. Carlito's that comedic relief that we need in these segments.
Yes, Carlito's doing his thing.
He
has a job for the year.
We move forward. The next match, you know, I agree with Nerdy D. There's parts of this show that you could just cut out and we'd be fine. Lyra versus Sonya Deville.
You missed a segment.
I missed one?
A little bit. Nothing crazy. It was just they came back for commercial and Xavier Woods was celebrating Tozawa's birthday.
Okay.
With Otis and them in the back.
Yeah, you're right. I did forget about that. But I forgot about it because this is something that should be cut out.
I mean, I have the script in front of me. I have the cage side seats breakdown.
But the next big thing is Lyra versus Sonya.
Mm.
Yeah. I gave this a 2. I'm gonna be honest with you. It has nothing to do with Sonya. Sonya's great. It has nothing to do with the rest of her group. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But you're having Lyra Valkyria. She beat Io. She beat Becky all in the past 12 months. But she loses to Sonya Deville? I don't know. That's shaky booking to me. Well, You got her hanging around these jobbers who still go to EDM concerts. I don't know. Lyra, what are we doing with her? We need to get Becky back in here quick to save her from jobber status.
Hey, you know what I'm saying? Look, Lyra found some friends, all right? Because she was getting jumped left and right, whether it be by Damage Control or now by the newly assembled stud line. And so now she got to get some friends. So she got some friends now. And
she chose the wrong friends. You could have found better friends.
They got revenge later tonight. They got a little bit of revenge.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's another segment we probably could have cut out. But
so Sonya beat Lyra with the Devil's Advocate, Deville's Advocate. Don't play on words.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I'm not a fan of the finisher itself. It's all right. It's not crazy.
Right. The next thing is, if I recall it, that's the Wyatt Six, right? The video,
the CM Punk made his entrance, and then Drew McIntyre came down. It was Nikki Cross video.
Yeah, the video played first. So, what are your thoughts on this video?
Oh, this video wasn't. I mean, I didn't really mind it because it was really short.
Right.
I mean, we didn't really hear nothing from her. It was just a bunch of screaming and shit.
Right.
I mean, I don't really think we need that much about Nikki because she was actually one of the characters who was on screen, like whether she was doing like all that staring and shit in the background, and she was here for the initial buildup when Bray and the Wyatt Six or whatever were doing their thing,
right? So,
my
question is this, and this is just me. I was overbooking this when I was thinking about this when I was trying to rate it. From what I can understand, this whole gimmick is we went crazy because we lost or we got betrayed by someone. So I know, you know, Rowan and Bo, it's Bray and Luke Harper. Gacy's probably going to be about the schism, because they betrayed him and left. Now they're at AEW. Dexter, I'm assuming, is going to talk about Indy and the way. So part of me wonders, do they attack Johnny at some point? But my other question is, like, who is the betrayer of Nikki? Are we going to go down the road of Alexa Bliss? Because weren't they a group at some point?
Yeah, but did she have a tag team partner after that? Was she like tag team with like...
Was it Piper?
Or I thought it was like Rhea. Was she a partner with Rhea or Raquel or one of them?
It may have been Raquel. So my other question is, are they going deeper down the path here? And they're talking about Sanity. And if they're talking about Sanity, we have a crossover with TNA right now. Where could you imagine it during a TNA show, the Wyatt Six coming out and attacking Eric Young?
Ooh,
that's some shit. That I would pop heavy for that.
Also, I forgot who was Nikki hanging around with when she won the 24/7 title and threw in the trash when she started acting weird for the first time.
Who was she? I don't remember. See, that's the thing. I don't remember a lot of her backstory. All the others I know. It's hers that I sort of got lost on.
Who was she hanging around with?
Oh, shoot.
I'm sure I can Google it.
Right.
Here, I'll look it up real fast while you do your talking.
Yeah, so...
About Nikki.
So outside of... So I thought the presentation was fine. I felt like we didn't get a lot of information from this video, which is fine. I'm sure eventually we'll figure this out. It also feels like
sorry, she was hanging out with Damage Control. She was stalking Damage Control, and then she was hanging around with them, and it was when EO and Dakota were tag team champs and Bayley was with them before Asuka and everybody joined.
Interesting.
That's who she was with when she threw the title in the trash.
Interesting. That's interesting. She's one of those that I don't know where we're headed with it, but the more and more I'm learning here is I'm not 100% sold on this gimmick yet. And there's they come back. We'll talk about them in a few minutes because they Wyatt Six come back. And attack Gable again, and so we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But they're inching me closer to being sold on this. We're making progress, and so that's all that I can ask out of them.
You got physical finally,
right? And there's only one thing about the attack that I want to talk about. We'll talk about that when we get to that segment. Next was CM Punk, I believe.
Yep.
So CM Punk is out here. Now, anytime CM Punk's on my screen, I forgot who tweeted it, but they said something along the lines of, doesn't matter if you disagree, CM Punk is, when CM Punk's on the screen, he's good for wrestling. This story really didn't need much more built, but they still made it more interesting by Seth Rollins being the special guest referee. Blindsiding McIntyre, you know, we already know that what the problems they have with Seth has with Punk. This match got real interesting real quick. It was already one of the top things on the card, but now you throw in this little wrench. What do you think about this segment?
I thought it was done pretty well. CM Punk comes out, does his typical "It's a great day, great night" beat in Monday Night Raw here in so and so city. Yeah. All he does do is talking. And now, you know, he asked Drew to come out, put his wristband, he taped his wrists up or whatever. And, you know, he said he was cleared to fight. So then we got confirmation. And then, you know, Drew came out all calm. You know, I'm going to fight SummerSlam, big money match, yada, yada. Adam Pearce comes out, reveals, you know, the referee, Seth Rollins. Drew was surprised. But, you know, Adam Pearce had no other option because, you know, he got him to apologize to the officials, I guess. He reinstated him, and now we're set for SummerSlam. He gets Seth on TV for, you know, the second biggest show of the year. Not gonna lie, I thought maybe he would just have to miss this year. I figured they would lean towards the special guest referee, especially after CM Punk had the referee shirt at the last pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that whole referee thing going on and how Drew pushed referees and how the referee just started to get the aspect of referee started getting more and more important or more and more prevalent as the story went on. And now we got Seth, you know, he don't really fuck with either of them. He'll mess with either of them.
Right.
So we'll see if he, who he screws over, if he screws them over, if they screw themselves over by getting overheated because Seth, quote unquote, didn't count fast enough. It has a lot of different unpredictable elements to the story. And what's even better is that there's no title on the line. So either party could win it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards Drew, but either party could win it.
Right.
I'll save my prediction for next week on who I think wins it and how I think they win it. But I think it's going to be very interesting. Mm. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I like this a lot. When we move forward, we have a little backstage. Dom's looking for Jay, and he gets a visit from Liv Morgan that quite literally, I lost my train of thought. I was talking to someone and completely just lost my train of thought when Liv Morgan entered the screen. Keep doing this. Especially if Liv is okay doing it, like, I ain't got a problem with it. She's earned a place now where, like, she's at the top of when I think of women wrestling on Raw, she's now one of the first a few names you think of because of the way they've booked this title run. Has it been the best? No, but it's rememberable, which is better than the last one. So no,
Liv's last one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's better than Liv's last run. So. Yeah, I gave this little it was real short. I gave it a 4 out of 5. It did what it needed to do. It was pretty great. We move forward. It's Xavier, Tozawa, Otis versus it was Cross and AOP, correct?
Yep. Final Testament.
I did not watch this match. I went to get food and Taco Bell highly disappointed me. Because they didn't have what I wanted.
It was a good match. It was, fun fact, this was the first time in 10 years that Xavier Woods was in a tag team match and none of his partners were New Day members.
Mm.
It's a fun fact for you.
Nice.
Shout out to WrestleMania for that fun fact. the match was good. AOP definitely showed some good ring work. You know, showed why they were tag team champions in NXT, dominant tag team champs. Karrion Kross actually looked better in the ring. He had some good moves.
Okay.
It looks like he has a new finisher. It's not that wacky one. This one's almost like an F5 variant. It looked good. It looked smooth. They got the win. They pinned Karrion Kross. And then Chad Gable and then the Creed brothers made their entrance.
I was back in time for Gable, so we'll go ahead and make this a separate section. The Creeds and Gable come out. They attack Otis and Tozawa after some promos. You know, Gable tries to offer them a spot back as the Alpha Academy. Otis says no. So I got to come in here and say this. Triple H did one of these little things to me. We're called. He came across my TV and slapped me in the face and said, don't ever question my booking again. Patience, young Padawan. Because my number one critique of Gable being involved with the Wyatt Six has been what? Well, he hasn't been able, or they won't be able to finish the Otis story. Right? Because I lived in a Vince McMahon world where you couldn't do two things at once. And Triple H just came across my TV screen, hit me across the face a couple times and said, look, we're going to do this thing differently. Mm-hmm. And we're going to finish the story and we're going to do both at the same time. And so I really appreciated that we're still continuing this. I know everyone thought maybe the Creeds and Chad versus Wyatt Six at some point. I think the first thing we get is the Creeds versus Tozawa and Otis. And Chad Gable's there sort of coaching the Creeds along, maybe even trying to interfere, and Bo Dallas continues to attack him. I think that's the route we could go down to build up why Uncle Howdy fights Chad Gable. I think that's what it's looking like may happen. So of the attack from the Wyatt Six, the only thing I have a critique for, and it's again, I heard this and I agree with Bully Ray. I don't like that they continuously come from the gorilla position. I wish they came from the crowd. I think if you had them one on each corner of the ring, made them feel trapped, and then Uncle Howdy attacked, it would, to me, that would be a little bit bigger. Ooh. I think Bully Ray's critique was more of they should never walk through Gorilla, because the first time they showed up, they destroyed Gorilla. Now you're just sort of casually letting them walk through the backstage.
Well, that possibly could be explained when Bo Dallas had his meeting with Adam Pearce.
Right. So now this is a wild theory that I'm sure I'm not the only one who thinks of this. Adam, I think Pearce is in charge of this bit, or involved in this in some way, shape, or form. Pearce is in on this hit on Chad Gable in some way, shape, or form. That's the only thing I can use to explain why you just let these groups of people and you haven't arrested them yet for anything, or, you know, so that's my wild fan theory for the week. But I like this a lot. I'm giving it a 4. I like the attack. You finally see Bo Dallas. I've always been a fan of Bo. I think he's better in the ring than Bray was. And
he's only 33.
That's crazy.
He's been around for a while too. He's only 33.
Yeah. I think he's better in the ring than Bray was. I think promo wise, you can see he's sort of held his own with this gimmick. I think he has a lot of motivation to make sure this thing doesn't suck. And
if that was his ring gear that he had on Monday last night, I think it's pretty decent ring gear.
Yeah.
He had the sleeveless shirt, I think just like some long black pants, had the mask on or whatever. It wasn't like a full ass costume. It was just, you know, no different than Rey Mysterio. You know what I'm saying? So I think his ring attire was decent. And if the other is dressed similar to like that, you know, just wrestling gear with a mask on, I will be bad.
My question with the others are, like, there's no way in hell that Eric Rowan wrestles with that bunny mask on.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah.
So.
And also, isn't Dexter's mask, like, isn't the beak too big, right? He has a beak on his.
So I think that there's, part of me wonders if, like, the mask, that could be for, like, entrance, and they can take it off, and it's sort of, like, the spirit of whatever they are.
Almost like when he had the goat mask or whatever.
Right. Next segment is forgettable. Pete Dunne and Bronson Reed. Literally didn't even happen. Sheamus comes out, interferes. I gave this a 1. Cut this thing from this from the show. We really didn't need it. I understand Dunne and Sheamus are probably going to be the feud out of this. I feel like Bronson Reed always gets put in everyone else's problems and can't ever build anything of his own. So, what's your thoughts on this?
There is a community question on this app for later. It was a clarification question about what kind of, like, why is Butch or Pete Dunne mad at Sheamus?
Mm-hmm.
And then is it just because Sheamus, like, what did do some solo stuff while Pete Dunne and Ridge end up doing some tag team stuff by themselves, and then Sheamus stopped coming around, and then Sheamus just got hurt, and when he came back, he didn't even check on Pete, just kept doing, he came back doing solo stuff.
Yeah, so my understanding is, like, Sheamus was hurt, Ridge and Pete sort of separated, and then when Sheamus came back, he didn't, like, yeah, like you said, he didn't check on Pete. I'm not even upset with, like, the storyline. I think it makes perfect, I think it's fine. I just,
The person I had a question about was B-Master.
Yeah, a
question on why they were beefing.
Yeah, I mean, the story's not that complex. Pete Dunne's just upset that he didn't get checked on by Sheamus. That's about as deep as that actually that story goes. I think they still got a lot of, but we also got to understand that this is only happening because Tyler Bates hurt. If Pete Dunne still had a tag team partner, they'd still be in NXT, like, fighting in the tag division. But Tyler Bate is hurt. So they have to find something for Pete Dunne to do. Next segment is Rhea and Dom out in the ring, Liv Morgan up in the crowd, and they have their little promo battle. Liv basically says, I have feelings for Dom. Dom feels the same way. Dom basically tells her to shut the fuck up, you stupid bitch. It's not exact word for word translation, but that's essentially what he said. But
Liv Morgan was caked up in the short shorts.
Right. She was caked up. Rhea about tried to go kill her, and Dom pulled her back in the ring. And if they would have, you know, struggled anymore, Rhea's tits would have popped out. So there was just a lot of sex appeal going on this segment.
Rhea licks Dom on the cheek.
Rhea gets the lick and a kiss. Dom's the luckiest man in the world. I think this is a really good segment. Built the story, but there's not one person who's watched wrestling longer than 10 minutes not know what the fuck's coming at SummerSlam.
Dom turned on Rhea.
If you've watched wrestling for longer than 10 minutes, you know what's coming. Like, it's very obvious. He didn't choose Liv, and now he's going to choose Liv. We all know what's coming. Like, it's pretty obvious. We get to the next segment. Selena Vega comes out holding a shankla and a busted up arm. She's still fighting. Her opponent is none other
than Zoe Stark.
Zoe Stark.
The future of the women's division.
Nah, stop that shit.
Miss Monday Night.
I'm tired of seeing this woman. She has the amount of charisma as a paper bag.
Well, guess what? That paper bag, if you cut some holes in it, put, you know, you color it a little bit, it's a, you know, it's a nice entertaining puppet, a mask. Entertaining.
Yeah, well, I'm tired of seeing her and her whole faction. I don't understand it. What the hell we Triple H see in this group? Now I did like that. I wonder if Max Caster is going to have something to say about that tomorrow. He likes to bring up WWE.
All the fans are like this on Twitter. They're holding up the twos. Yeah. I think they're doing something like this or whatever.
Yeah.
The stud line. The Butch Whackers.
Right. Zelina won this, right? Because I know the
she won with the Yoshi Tonic.
Yeah, because Lyra and the jobbers come down and attack the stud line. And we get a
Mia Yim coined it on Twitter, okay?
Right.
Yim coined it. So if Mia Yim said it, it's cool.
That's the name. That's the name. That's official canon now. So we then lead to the main event, Sammy and Jay versus Judgment Day. I thought it was fine. I think it's cool to have Jay and Sammy together, maybe teasing them joining the bloodline. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we're reading too much into that. I'm not a big fan of how the show ended. It was sort of rushed. It just felt rushed with Braun coming out. And then I don't know. I just didn't like that ending. Overall, I thought this Raw, maybe like a 3. Maybe we could round up and say a 4.
This Raw was solid, all right?
Right.
It was close to perfect, but it wasn't quite perfect. I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
We have the evolution and the development of the stud line. We have Judgment Day.
You're like the only one that's happy about the stud line.
No, go on Twitter, yo. Twitter is loving it right now. Twitter is loving it, okay? We have the cracks of the Judgment Day expanding. I think we're gonna get. I'll say for next week. That's more of a prediction, but we got. See, Raw. The reason I like Raw better than SmackDown right now is because, you know, with these 3 hours, we're seeing like six, seven stories.
Right.
You get the, we gotta get screen time.
And you get like the side quest of each story. So yeah, I agree with you. Raw's the better show at the moment. It may be the best show in wrestling TV right now.
Definitely.
So let's go to some of these questions. Let's start with the one you post first. Now that AEW has done a couple things, that Wavy D has recommended, what are 3 to 5 things that AEW should do to enhance their product? I have 4. So the first one, Performance Center. I'm not going to stop that, James. I don't care what your opinion is. Performance Center. That's my number one complaint right now, is you don't have a Performance Center.
Literally just a place for the wrestlers to hang out, get to know each other.
Right.
They can work on their match for the big pay-per-view coming up.
Right.
We're not saying you guys got to hit the gym every single day. Or have, like, you know, trains of college students.
Right.
Just a gym that Tony Khan owns.
Right.
That these guys could meet up at, work on the, you know, get the ring rust out, and just get to know each other.
Right. Number two, this goes back to sort of what you were saying about earlier about Ospreay and MJF. I'm one of those that think that match went on way too long. My number two is less focus on wrestling on the weekly shows. I think if you focus more, and I know James's response is going to be that AEW is not built for storytelling. It's built for wrestling. But we need a reason why the match is happening. And if you focused on that and saved the 60-minute banger for Wembley or some other pay-per-view, the match would mean more.
So I'm not fully on board there, just because, like, AEW, if they want to stick to their moniker, you know, wrestling, all about wrestling, 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 you know, say if you want wrestling in your wrestling show, like, if you want 80% of your show to be wrestling, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I just think you got to save your pay-per-view level matches for pay-per-views.
Right, right.
If you want to run 6 or 7 wrestling matches in a 2-hour thing, go ahead. Each match, you know, you got a little 10-15-minute match. You know what I'm saying? Amongst, you know, some lower card guys, some mid card, mixing some main card guys. Mm-hmm. But, like, save, like, these super spots and these super big matches for your pay-per-views. You know what I'm saying? You got to sell them junks.
My number three is they need to have smaller pay-per-view cards. These 16, 17 match cards, too much.
Yeah, you got to earn a spot in pay-per-view. You got to earn a spot.
Right. And then my number four, sort of similar to what they've done with Collision, where they went to like that 1200 seat arena. You need smaller arenas on Dynamite.
Is that a permanent thing, or is this for the summer?
That's like a summer thing. I think they're doing it for like a month or two. But I like the transition, and Dynamite needs the same thing. Dynamite averages what, like 3,000 to 4,000 people. Why are we running 18,000 seat arenas? Go find some small arenas. You don't have to go to the big markets if they don't have a small arena. You know, instead of going to Dallas, you can go find, you know, some little podunk town in Texas people will travel to.
What I think for, like, reason number 4/5 is, do they tape Rampage during their Collision days?
They tape Rampage at the end of Dynamite.
So what I think they should do is they should run Collision and Rampage out of a studio show. You know, say, like, so what they're doing now for the summer?
So
continue doing that for Collision and Rampage.
Right.
Run those both then, and then you could tour around Dynamite to smaller venues.
Right. Essentially, Rampage and Collision need to be turned into what NXT is. You know,
Rampage. Honestly,
I mean, yeah, Rampage should be gone. But you have anything else to add to some suggestions AEW should do?
I think AEW should have designated titles for designated shows.
Agreed.
I think I made a list on one of James's podcasts. I was in the comment section making a list, but you know, you have your AEW World Heavyweight title and your TBS title on Dynamite or whatever, and then you got your TNT and your International, whatever. I don't know. You put, just separate them. Put the tag team titles on one show, the trios title on a different show, one mid card here, another mid card there, world title, world title, you know, say split it up.
Right.
Because they were even. I was able to get like 4 on this side, 4 on that side.
Right.
Get rid of the fucking WTF title. or whatever. Do whatever you want with that. Like, get rid of that bullshit. But honestly, separate rosters, separate titles. And I, you know, saying use Collision as your B show, because that's honestly what it is your B show. And you put, you know, you set up your rosters. And I think that's the best way to do it. Because like, when you run a show on Wednesdays, and like, you know, they're typically on Wednesday, and then you do like, you know, you need to get some filler content, or you need to get a step in for your next show, you just throw it on Collision that week. Mm-hmm. It's like, who's watching Collision on, who's like, people,
right.
people watch Saturdays. It, like, it's one thing you have a, like a one Saturday a month like WWE does, where I can set that aside and not go out that week. But if you're doing it every single night, every single weekend, guess what? I'm missing like most of your shows.
Right. All right. So B-Master has a couple for us. The first is, I'm going to go with the easiest one to answer. He asks, am I in the minority that doesn't enjoy Raw? I'm going to be straight up with you. I think you, B-Master, I think you're one of the very few people that I know of that does not like Raw. So I think that's,
especially if you're saying you like SmackDown over Raw, it's one thing. It's one thing to say you're not digging Raw right now, but if you're saying you like a SmackDown over Raw, you might be the minority.
Right. Right. His next one is, I'm gonna save the AEW one for last. Do you like the new Bloodline ran by Solo, who is more vicious, or the old Bloodline that was run by Roman, who was more cunning and manipulative?
I definitely like the old Bloodline better, just because they also have like 3 years worth of stories and great storytelling. Solo's newer, but also Solo's not quite super doing it for me, especially because they got rid of their microphone and Paul Heyman, their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jay and Jimmy and Sammy are all great personalities, and you replace them with the Tonga brothers or Tonga twins, whatever, who have no personality.
Right.
And then you have Jacob, who's still new, but he's treated as like a savage. So he's like a savage, not a comedy guy.
Right.
And his wrestling is overshadowing your leader.
Right.
And even your leader, he got better on the mic, but he's still not the greatest on the mic, even though he got better.
Understood.
And he's just not the greatest in-ring worker as well. They're all, I don't know. The old ones had better wrestlers.
I feel you. I think they both have their pros and their cons. And honestly, if I had to choose one, it would be Roman. I'm a bigger fan of the more cerebral mind game than just being outright, you know, a brute. And that's what Roman did the best. Last question from the Discord. How is someone supposed to enjoy AEW after watching other wrestling shows that tell stories and tell you who a wrestler is? This was sort of a conversation James and B-Master are having. I'm going to let you answer, then I'll put in, see, and add to what you have to say.
So I do see where James is coming from, even though they are gatekeeping a little bit, where it's like, you know they complain that the viewership isn't up there, but then like when you're kind of gatekeeping and telling potential new fans, you know, Google the guy, or you gotta put in more work, you gotta be in more work to be a fan.
It's for the hardcore folks, right?
Look for the sickos,
right?
It's like, don't complain about the viewership or people's criticism on it when they're kind of giving you ways on how they would fix it or watch it. But at the same time, if they want to book for the hardcore folks, and you know, the only true way to enjoy their product is by being a hardcore fan, maybe AEW just might not be for you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, you don't have to watch it. It's not for everybody. If you just want to turn your brain off and watch some wrestling and watch two guys beat each other up, AEW is a good product. You know what I'm saying? It has some high points, has a lot of low points, but it has its high points. It has, like, you know, on a weekly show, on the average, you're going to see a lot of in-ring moves that you're not going to see on WWE. It has a lot of good stuff. And I honestly compare it to old Prime TNA, just without the character work.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally Prime TNA with no character work.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because even weekly TNA back in the day had banger matches.
Right,
like you can go back and watch Banger. Like they would have steel cage and like Ultimate Death matches and freaking Asylum matches.
King of the Mountain, right? Well, they didn't. King of the Mountain was more pay per view, right? I don't think they ever ran that randomly. But
yeah, the Division X matches, they have the Abyss and his Asylum matches.
Yeah,
him and Sabu on like random Wednesdays,
right?
And like it was, you know, a lot of spots, a lot of crazy wrestling, but they also had the story to back it up. Mm-hmm. But and I think that's why TNA was so good, because it was still ran out of a studio.
If TNA, when they started, because the thing that I hate the most that these AEW fans say is, well, they're doing pretty good for 5 years in the business, better than TNA was doing. Well, TNA didn't have the funding that you had. If TNA had
WCW too.
Right. If TNA had a billionaire, with a dad who is like the 50th most richest person in the world funding the show, and not Jeff Jarrett or Dixie Carter, I think TNA gets a little bit more, there's a potentiality with the type of programming they're putting on in the early 2000s. They may have overtaken WWE as the top spot if they had that funding.
As far as AEW, I think if they swallowed their pride and they went to a studio show, near some random college campuses or whatever, whether it be down in Florida or out in California, what I'm saying?
Shoot, you literally own Daly's place, Tony.
The reason Florida might be hard is because you got WWE down there. That's kind of like they spot.
Right.
I feel like if they went out to California, like in LA somewhere, or just got a little studio,
or even if they did something, every week. If they did something, they use pro wrestling tees. They're based in Chicago, so if you ran something with them, where like you can get merch and stuff made there, you go to a Chicago show, you can buy your merch from PWT's actual store instead of having to wait to get it online or whatever. I see what you're saying. I agree. As for B-Master's question, you really have to watch AEW from a different lens than how you watch WWE. You got to understand it's a different product. I don't necessarily like that mentality, but that's really the only way that I've learned to enjoy AEW is to understand that it's not WWE and that it's unfair to judge them as if they were WWE.
Turn your brain off and just watch the guys hurt each other.
You just gotta sit there and sort of act like you're watching an action movie that has no plot.
Fast and Furious.
Basically. But with that, we'll move forward. We'll end the show with Thirsty Tuesday this week.
Sure.
So the last on Friday, I gave week three's matchups. We got a bit of voting in. Let me pull that up. I had it earlier. The winners are Roman Reigns over LA Knight, as assumed. Ricky Stark sweeping the voting over Ace Austin, which I kind of expected would happen.
I thought it was is that Matt Taven?
No, that's Ace Austin from TNA.
Oh, I thought that was somebody else.
Cody Rhodes beats Orange Cassidy. And the man Ludwig Kaiser beats Wardlow. So the last four matches of the first round, we start with AEW's Juice Robinson versus Finn Balor.
Finn Balor
all day.
It's like a hobo.
Right.
Country hobo.
We have AEW's Daniel Garcia versus, I guess, still technically WWE, Ricochet.
I'll go Ricochet.
I agree, Ricochet. We have the battle of the tag team partners, Grayson Waller versus Austin Theory.
Gotta go Austin Theory. His eyebrows are a little bushy, but he fixes those up a little bit. I gotta go Austin Theory. Grayson Waller, cool and all, but...
Bro, Grayson's my favorite of the group. But, yeah, if we're going based on, like, looks, yeah, it's Theory all day.
He's more built, too.
Yeah, then finally, AEW's Jay White versus Logan Paul.
Logan Paul.
Yeah, I think I got to go Logan here as well.
The Maverick.
Yeah. All right, so there's that. We're not going to do the little game this time. It's hard to keep up with that. So maybe if we have our little special guest for prediction week, we'll have him.
I did message him. He said he took next week off. It's approved on the calendar. So any unforeseen circumstances, unforeseen events, he will be here next week.
Perfect. So maybe we'll have him play that game next week after we do our SummerSlam predictions. That's the show next week. We'll just be straight predictions. We'll have, Steel Chair Twan?
Yep,
is his name?
Steel Chair Twan.
On TikTok? Yep. He's going to be a special guest to help us predict SummerSlam. But until then, y'all have a great rest of your week. We'll see y'all next week. Brother, I'm going. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. 'Cause later